Good afternoon. Welcome to the community news covering the towns of Marlborough, Hudson, Harvard, Stowe, and Bolton. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. The program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashland, Bolton, and Harvard, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Marlborough Hudson Community Advocate of May 29th, the Independent in Bolton, the Stowe Independent in Bolton Independent, also from May 28th, and the Harvard Press from May 29th. This is Alan Chapman, along with Bob Brady, reading to you live from Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. We're going to kick off tonight in Stowe. Memorial Day traditions never end. At the annual federal holiday launching, the unofficial start of summer, Memorial Day is eagerly anticipated, but the crowds attending this year's parade and ceremonies recognizing those who have served their country, it appeared Stowe residents did not forget the real meaning of the day. Nothing much changes with the annual town celebration from year to year, but it is always fresh. The paper parade through town center to Brookside Cemetery, as always, was led by veterans and town and state officials, followed by scout troops and central school first graders who placed flowers on vets' graves around Brookside. And truly, old-time music was played by the Stowe Minutemen in their circa 1775 clothing. The ceremonies, coordinated by Tom Zaworski and the Veteran Graves Committee, featured its traditional remarks, benediction, and flag salute, and the reading of the names of every service member killed in action from the time of the Revolutionary War. As in previous years, Hale Middle School 8th graders offered commemorative readings, including the Gettysburg Address. The holiday weekend also featured the annual refreshing of the flags at the Cemetery of Veterans, those serving the town. Troop 1 Stowe replace the flags at the service members' graves in Brookside, while Stowe Fire takes care of the new flags for its departed members, and the Stowe Minutemen refresh the flags of veterans in the Lower Village and Hillside cemeteries, where many who served our country up to 250 years ago are buried. Stowe could very well be carrying on these traditions a century from today. Hopefully, in the words of President Abraham Lincoln in his Gettysburg Address, these actions will continue to encourage increased devotion to the cause for which they gave their last full measure of devotion. Sounds of Stowe Concert Benefit, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. The Sounds of Stowe Chorus will present Sail Away, Songs from the Salt Sea, a concert celebrating maritime music and traditions, featuring guest performers and a community sing-along on June 7th at 4 p.m. The event will take place at the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton. That's 353 Great Road in Stowe. The concert will bring together the Sounds of Stowe Chorus, the Artemis Circle Choral Project, and traditional musicians Keith Murphy and Becky Tracy for an afternoon program inspired by the life and on and around the sea. Directed by Christina Kennedy, the performance will include folk traditions, choral works, and maritime-themed music intended to reflect the adventure, mystery, and community associated with the ocean. Audience members will also have the opportunity to participate in a sea chanty sing-along during the event. Organizers said the concert will benefit the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, an independent ocean research and conservation organization. Attendees may make additional donations through the QR code or in person at the concert. Additional information and tickets are available at Sounds of Stowe Chorus. And you can share this on Facebook at www.facebook.com/share/IGUBNE34Y. And that is Sounds of Stowe Sail Away. Okay. The Stowe Select Board devoted a significant portion of its May 12th meeting to discussing the implications of two citizen petitions that passed the May 9th annual town meeting. One directing the board to restore Common Road to a two-way street, and a second asking that the select board issue a declaration related to democracy. Select Board Chairman Megan Birch McMichael set firm ground rules at the outset, making it clear that the discussion would be held solely among the five board members without public comment, but in compliance with the open meeting law. Any votes, as reiterated at the town meeting, are non-binding for the select board, Birch McMichael reminded the packed room. However, I felt it was important for the board to discuss again amongst the five of us if we wanted to take any action. Several audience members briefly addressed the select board during the public comment, urging them to respect the ATM vote, and warning that dismissing citizens' petitions could be a troubling precedent. The first petition, Article 48, called for the select board to make Common Road a two-way street and requested a $100,000 transfer from free cash to fund engineering and construction toward that end. The road was closed at the west end during the library renovation, leaving the east entrance open, while the ATM vote in favor did not force the select board to address the issue. The vote, authorizing spending up to $100,000 from free cash to the process, if needed, is considered binding, though the town has yet to clarify how that will work. The second petition, Article 50, asked the select board to formally to issue a formal declaration passed by the town meeting by a vote of 90-14 and transmitted it appropriately to appropriate state officials on July 4th. Board members expressed the broad personal sympathy with the spirit of the declaration. The board had previously sent a related letter on the same topic. Through that letter, it had been modified because select board members felt they couldn't speak for the entire town on certain points. Now, with an overwhelming town meeting vote in hand, the calculation was different. After a debate about whether to draft a new cover letter or simply transmit the certified vote, the board ultimately voted 3-2 to send the certified town meeting vote along with the full text of Article 50 as it was presented and voted on May 9th. The select board noted that the July 4th delivery posed a procedural wrinkle. The board cannot meet on a holiday. But the majority that took the view that the mail transmission did not require a formal meeting, the motion was carried, and the material will be sent ahead of the July 4th date the petitioners requested. A new housing in store for Stowe. On another topic, the select board had plenty to agree on in helping bring housing to town that should be more residents, should be in more residents' price range. Lynn Sweet, a 40B available housing consultant to developer Kane Built, outlined plans for 20 three-bedroom starter homes on Bruin Road. She explained that the first step would be applying for a project eligibility letter from McHousing. If issued, Sweet noted that the next step would be to file a comprehensive permit application with the Zoning Board of Appeals, which would then begin public hearing process. In line with 40B regulations, Sweet reported 25% of the units would be considered affordable. Of those, five homes, residents would have priority on three. All of the houses would measure about 1,874 square feet, she said, with Bruin connecting to the Sudbury Road. Sweet said the plan is to host a shared septic system and plug into the town of Sudbury water supply. moving on to Bolton. The Bolton Select Board met on May 14th and reviewed the annual town meeting operations, discussed a regional clean energy initiative, received updates from the town administrator, Marie Salbavero, and approved several appointments and policy items. Select Board member Kate Buick opened the post-town meeting discussion with town moderator Doug Story and town clerk Christine Zena, both of whom said that meeting ran more smoothly than last year. Zena noted that the attendance was significantly lower this year, with 164 check-ins compared to more than 500 in 2025, helping improve the check-in process. She also said that staff attempted to a new table setup outside the Florence Sawyer School to improve track flow and allowing electrical outlets locations, limiting some options. She added that encouraging residents to arrive starting at 6:30 rather than just before 7 start time also helped avoid bottlenecks. Executive Assistant Jenny Jacobson shared two pieces of community feedback. She suggested keeping voting windows open longer during clicker tray testings next year, after two residents mistakenly believed their devices were malfunctioning. The second piece was that some residents preferred the privacy of clicker voting. Select Board member Bill Nichols pondered whether the annual budget article should remain early in the warrant or be moved later in the evening. Story said, "I'm a traditionalist," and he preferred keeping it near the beginning, calling the budget one of the focal points of the town meeting. Nichols and Story agreed it was tricky balance with articles going on. The board heard a presentation from Gina Ash of Next Gen Energy regarding the Keep Lights On Massachusetts initiative, a proposed regional clean energy consortium focused on creating community microgrids and battery storage systems across participating municipalities. Ash explained that the initiative grew out of a $250 million Federal Department of Energy grant created under the Biden administration to support distributed energy resources. The proposal would bring together several Massachusetts towns into a virtual power plant structure using solar generation and long-duration battery life. According to Ash, participating towns would each potentially host up to 5 megawatts of solar energy and 10 megawatts of battery storage, with systems connected regionally to improve purchasing power and financing opportunities. Salbavero noted that the Forbish Mill Road culvert project will appear later on the agenda following town meeting approval, allowing the select board to accept easements at no cost. She said Bolton's special legislation regarding alcohol licensing remains pending in the state legislature and currently sits in a House committee. Salbavero plans to follow up with State Representative Kate Hogan regarding the bill's progress before the legislative session concludes in July. Salbavero said Parks and Rec summer registration are slightly ahead of last year's pace. Additionally, a new Sports Talk Tots program is running on Wednesdays and Fridays on the town common. The town website transition has officially launched, though staff continue troubleshooting migration and functional issues. Salbavero said state-restricted government estimates increased by approximately $47,000. Our cannabis revenue projections may come in below expectations, with the town currently projecting approximately half of the anticipated $66,000. The Neshoba Regional School District postponed discussions regarding wastewater treatment funding agreements, and Salbavero said that she had a meeting with Kirk Dunning and Ross McCarran in the coming week. Also, she referred to Massachusetts Municipal Association webinar focus on managing municipal budgets with overrides and broader economic concerns. We're going to take a break now for a public service announcement, and then Barb will be back with more news.
Would you like to hear news from Clinton, Lancaster, Boylston, and West Boylston that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:15. I'm going to read articles from the Marlboro-Hudson Community Advocate. After PFAS lawsuit, Hudson will construct new well, by Paul Hopkins. Some bossa nova jazz and a slideshow of town accomplishments greeted town meeting voters at Hudson High School. But before long, residents got down to serious business. At town meeting, residents voted to appropriate $1.65 million to design and build a replacement Chestnut Street well number 3, with work expected to begin this fall. The replacement well will be drilled near the existing infrastructure to allow the reuse of equipment used to move water to the treatment plant. Hudson and other communities sued manufacturers of PFAS, including 3M, DuPont, and Tyco/BASF. PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, are toxic forever chemicals detected in public water supplies across the country. Hudson was told last year it would eventually receive $2.9 million before expected costs and fees in installments from the lawsuit. The town meeting appropriation pulls about $1.38 million from the 3M settlement account and $275,000 from the DuPont settlement account. Town manager Thomas Gregory recommended the appropriation of the settlement funds. In information provided to voters, he said the plan is for the benefit of the water ratepayers for infrastructure improvements that would otherwise be funded via the Water Enterprise Fund's retained earnings. Today, Hudson's drinking water is considered safe. The latest PFAS testing showed non-detect levels in water entering the system, according to interim DPW Director Rajitha Parametla. The most recent report available on the town's website from 2024 indicated water was being tested monthly for the chemicals. Early in the PFAS crisis in 2019, when high levels were first detected, residents were advised to use bottled water for consumption. The town provided some of that water. PFAS has been above the 70 parts per trillion level that triggered a health advisory, but it then dropped to acceptable levels. In the meantime, Hudson invested $1.25 million to install a filtration system in 2022, which replaced a temporary system that was installed in 2019, several months after the problem was detected. PFAS chemicals are now known to be nearly omnipresent and found in food and food packaging, soil, water, consumer goods, and household products. New store on the block. Shaw's becomes Marlboro's newest supermarket, by Evan Walsh. Shaw's in Marlboro is officially open. On May 22nd, dozens of eager community members gathered outside 193 Boston Post Road West to celebrate the city's newest supermarket. The grocer will employ about 170 individuals, and with a ribbon-cutting ceremony, the store officially opened to much fanfare. It's well worth the wait. The dedication you all put into the store and the community is extremely remarkable, and I can't thank you enough, said Marlboro Mayor J. Christian DeMays. I've worked in retail management, so I know behind the scenes all the planograms and all that wonderful stuff. I do appreciate that line of work. He added, Shaw's has long been recognized for providing quality products, exceptional customer service, and a welcome shopping experience for families throughout New England. The opening of this new location marks a commitment to Marlboro and contributes to the growth, convenience, and vitality of the community. Ken Rinaldi, the president for Shaw's and Star Market, was there to celebrate the occasion. "What a great day for Shaw's and for Marlboro," Rinaldi told the crowd. "Today, we're officially proud to open the doors of our new Shaw's here in Marlboro and celebrate this ribbon cutting with you. For more than 165 years, Shaw's has been part of everyday life for communities across New England." He added, "We were so fortunate to be able to hire associates from the city. A lot of the associates who work here are from the community. That's why it's important for us to open here in Marlboro. I want to give a round of applause for all the store associates who worked hard to ensure that this store is perfect for today. And let me tell you, it's perfect for today. The Marlboro location is Shaw's 147th store. Shaw's is the oldest continuously operating supermarket chain in the United States, and the company's New England roots were firmly planted in 1860 when George C. Shaw opened his first store. The site, located near the Apex Center along Route 20, was formerly a Hannaford supermarket. That store closed in September 2025, with Hannaford claiming that it was not extended the opportunity to renew its lease. Banners honoring Hudson veterans again line town's streets. It was a special trip to Hudson for Frank Farina. Farina traveled from Davidson, North Carolina, to be among the dozens of family members honoring veterans at the Hudson Hometown Heroes Ceremony on May 16th. Farina's father, who was also named Frank, served in World War II and is buried in St. Michael's Cemetery. He is also represented on one of the nearly 190 veteran banners that hang throughout the center of Hudson. The banners, which hang from Armed Services Day until Veterans Day each year, honor veterans who have a connection to Hudson. Veterans are recognized with 24 by 48-inch banners that can be seen along Washington Street, Broad Street, and Central Street. Candidates for the banners must have served in any of the branches of the military: Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, National Guard, Space Force, or Coast Guard, and must have either been honorably discharged or died in the line of duty. A 7-member committee researches and confirms a candidate's record of service. While official military photos are preferred, some veterans are shown in areas they served. Some businesses make donations to help offset the costs to families in need. This year, there were 25 new banners. Speaking to a crowded auditorium at Town Hall, State Representative Kate Hogan, the event's keynote speaker, noted a rising disdain for democratic ideas and institutions here and abroad, attacks on freedom enshrined in our Constitution. "Our response is a reflection of who we are. We stand for liberty and justice for all," she said. Hogan said the town's 25 new banners honor veterans' sacrifice, decency, courage, and bravery, encouraging people to take time to read the banners. "Extraordinary Americans have always answered the call of freedom," she said. "Today, that service and sacrifice is more important than ever." Speaker Brian Johannes, a member of the Hometown Heroes Committee, said the project is a visible reminder to our community that the freedoms we enjoy were secured and defended by ordinary citizens willing to serve something greater than themselves. Johannes said the project was funded with an initial $20,000 from town meeting to provide for the long-term maintenance of banners and equipment. He said it has grown into a meaningful tribute that stretches through the streets of our community. Hogan, Johannes, and others offered thanks to the town, select board, Department of Public Works, Hudson Light and Power, Assabet Valley, Marine Corps Junior ROTC, and Hudson Scout Troop 2. The Branches of Marlboro named among nation's best. The Branches of Marlboro, a benchmark-assisted living and mind and memory care community, has been recognized as one of the best senior living communities in both Massachusetts and the nation, earning top honors in the 2026 U.S. News and World Report Best Senior Living Ratings. The Branches achieved best status by earning the highest possible rating in memory care. Survey responses highlighted outstanding performances in key areas including safety, quality of care, community leadership, staff, value, and overall resident experience. Selected from more than 800 communities statewide, the Branches of Marlboro distinguished itself through exceptional feedback from residents and their families. The community is also the only one in the greater Marlboro area to receive this prestigious recognition. This recognition is a testament to the trust that residents and their families place in us and the extraordinary work of our associates, said Tom Grape, founder, chairman, and CEO of Benchmark Senior Living. At Benchmark, we are driven every day to raise the standard for what senior living can and should be, creating communities where seniors truly thrive. Located off Route 85 near Marlboro High and Goodnow Brothers Elementary School, the Branches has provided trusted care for local seniors since 2019 with the goal of helping residents discover and connect to what's meaningful and possible at every stage of their lives. With care that spans independent assisted living to memory care assisted living for those living with Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia, the community's open concept design and flexible floor plans promote engagement. Residents who need it benefit from 24/7 personalized support tailored to their individual needs. Residents enjoy private apartments along with chef-prepared meals served all day, on-site supportive healthcare services, scheduled transportation, and a full calendar of social and wellness programs. A bistro, private dining room and kitchen, hair salon, recreation room, spacious living areas, and outdoor spaces with special features like container gardens, an outdoor fireplace, help foster connection and engagement. Friends of the Hudson Public Library hosting yard sale. The Friends of the Hudson Public Library are hosting the fourth annual YART and yard sale on May 30th. Okay, well, that's passed. From 9 to 1, this event was a fundraiser for programs and museum passes for the Hudson Public Library while providing a shopping experience for the community and supporting our local artists and crafters. Artists and craftspeople sell their handmade art and crafts in their yard or driveway. Townspeople sell their secondhand goods in their driveway or yard. You can download a map to easily locate the sale locations at huds.pl or pick up a map from the Hudson Public Library prior to the sale. And now let's listen to a public service announcement, and then Alan will bring us more news.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
And we are going to have a few more notes from Bolton, and then we'll move on to Harvard Press. Memorial Day ceremonies in Bolton. Despite the pouring rain at times, the Scout Troop 1 Bolton were not deterred as they laid flowers at graves in Bolton on Memorial Day. Community members joined the town's cemetery department, police and fire personnel, scouts, and local families for the annual observance, which begins at the Public Safety Building before proceeding to Bolton's 4 cemeteries. At each cemetery, geraniums were placed at veterans' graves and brief services in remembrance of those who served the country were held. The morning concluded with closing ceremonies at the field house at Memorial Field on Waterquaduck Hill Road, where refreshments were provided by the Bolton Parks and Recreation Department. In a statement following the event, organizers thanked residents for attending. Despite the rainy weather, it was wonderful to see so many residents and families come together on Monday to honor Memorial Day. The statement read, "The strong community turnout showed the deep respect and appreciation Bolton has for the men and women who have served our country. Thank you to everyone who participated and helped make the day so meaningful." Backyard Bolton has something for everyone. Whether you're looking for a unique, one-of-a-kind gift, a cold Kona ice, a hot artisan pizza, or a walk with Spot, the robot dog, Backyard Bolton has a variety of options. To learn about some of the artisans and food producers who will be on the Bolton Common on Saturday, June 6th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., there are nearly 40 vendors this year. Most are selling unique products or foods. There are also organizations such as the Bolton Lions Club and members of the student-led initiative Hearts Beyond Memory, where all ages and abilities can learn to craft flowers for local seniors. New this year, the food truck Wheat Plus Watercrafted Doughs, which sells artisan pizzas, are getting great reviews. Parking is at the Trinity Church on 14 Waterquaduck Hill Road in Bolton. Free adaptive rail trails aim to improve access to the outdoors. Residents of both Bolton and Stowe are among those invited to take part in Rail Trail Rides, Sudbury, a free adaptive cycling program aimed at making outdoor recreation more accessible. All ages and abilities are included. The program is hosted by the Sudbury Commission on Disability and the Sudbury Rail Trails Advisory Committee in partnership with All Out Adventures. Upcoming riding sessions will take place on June 6th, August 22nd, and September 19th, beginning at the Broad Acres Farm parking lot on 62 Morse Road in Sudbury. One-hour sessions will be offered between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Participants will have access to a variety of adaptive cycles, including recumbent trikes, hand cycles, and tandem bicycles. Organizers said trained staff members will be available to assist riders and ensure a safe and welcoming experience. Helmets will be provided, though riders may bring their own. The Neshoba graduation, how to watch. If you're a parent or a loved one of a 2026 Neshoba graduate, or you'd just like to watch the event, Bolton Access TV has you covered. There'll be both a live stream of the event this Sunday at June 7th, beginning at 12:30 p.m., and the DVD USB option for purchase. Note there is a deadline to pre-order the recording. The Neshoba Regional High School graduation live stream is counting down the days until graduation, and thanks to the hard work of the crew at Bolton Access TV, those who can't be there at the DCU Center in Worcester can tune into a live stream. The link is at youtube.com, and you can search for the Neshoba graduation. The Bolton Access TV will again be selling copies of the Neshoba Regional High School graduation ceremony notes. Bolton Access TV Executive Director Nick McCatchy. We are pleased to be able to offer you a choice of DVD, USB drive, or both, and all orders will be delivered directly to your house. As a nonprofit organization, your purchase not only keeps a wonderful keepsake, but also helps Bolton Access TV continue to fund coverage of school and local events. Students focus on brightening lives and boosting memories. This past Memorial Day weekend, Neshoba High School sophomores Leona Azor and her mother, Petty, brought 100 man-made poppies to two local nursing homes, the New Horizon in Marlboro and Addison in Hudson. Six volunteers, including myself, made the flowers, said Azor. Due to restrictions in the memory care units, only my mom and I are registered Faith and Family Hospice volunteers were able to deliver flowers to patients. The idea of this project arose when we noticed that the simple white rooms of the patients in the senior home we visited. We immediately thought it would be nice to add some color and decoration to brighten their spaces. The flowers were well received. To spread the kindness, Azar has launched Hearts Beyond Memory, described as a student-led community service initiative dedicated to supporting hospice patients, seniors with dementia, and their families through compassion, companionship, handmade craft flowers, donation drives, and volunteer service. Through volunteering, I have seen how loneliness and memory loss can deeply affect seniors, especially those who rarely receive visitors or a personal note, Leona noted. Our goal is to bring comfort, connection, and moments of joy through colorful handmade flowers to residents that can receive and keep as lasting memories. We hope to bring the community together through services while encouraging young people to make a meaningful difference in the lives of others who may feel lonely or forgotten. In addition to making flowers, the group is seeking donations of picture books, travel, animals, nature, visual magazines, large jigsaw puzzles, word search, mind games, coloring books, and crayons, fidget and sensory toys, and large print books. The purpose of this donation drive is to collect memory engagement and sensory support items for seniors with dementia in hospice and memory care units. Through volunteering with Faith and Family Hospice at New Horizons, patients respond positively to materials with strong visual elements, such as large print books and travel or picture books. Even patients with advanced nonverbal dementia are often able to engage with images which can spark interest, provide comfort, and support emotional connections. By providing accessibility and visual engaging materials, this drive aims to enhance the quality of life, reduce isolation, and create meaningful moments of interaction for patients at memory loss. Hearts Beyond Memory will be at Backyard Bolton on June 6th from 6 p.m. to 6 from 10 a.m. on June 6th, Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and plan to continue the community outreach. The memory donation drive, which will run through which is just ending, has drop-off points at Bolton Public Library, Bolton Bean, the Neshoba Regional High School, Florence Sawyer School, and the Luther Burbank Middle School. Okay. Miley's Playhouse inspires others. This past year has been a busy one for 13-year-old Miley Kidd of Bolton. Last summer, her wish for a playhouse was granted by Make-A-Wish of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. She then served as a guest of honor at the annual tree lighting ceremony at Faneuil Hall Marketplace on November 22nd. Kidd helped flip the switch on the 50-foot holiday tree at Quincy Market. Now that the weather is warmer, she looks forward to visits to the playhouse, where Bolton Access TV caught up with her and her family. Miley's family says a custom-built playhouse is helping Miley get a sense of independence, boosting her confidence, and strengthening connections with family and friends. What began as a simple structure has become a meaningful space for daily life and interaction. It's more than a playhouse, said her mother, Candy Kid. It also helped her be part of the action. The playhouse provides Miley with a dedicated environment where she can engage with siblings, neighbors, and friends, offering both independence and opportunities for social connection. Her family said the space has encouraged her to spend more time outdoors and participate more and fully in activities with others. Moving on to Harvard. Harvard Advantage in healthcare stopped at the town line. Nearly 2 years ago, after Neshoba Valley Medical Center closed, local ambulances are driving longer distances to reach emergency rooms. Families are facing six-month waits for mental health therapists, and seniors are traveling further to reach doctors who used to be nearby. By regional standards, Harvard is doing well. Its ambulance service has expanded. Its supply of primary care doctors and mental health providers ranks among the best in the Neshoba district. Its Council on Aging provides transportation and senior services that help buffer some of the pressure on older Surrey residents. But the region's healthcare shortages still shape daily here. And in some cases, Harvard's advantages merely mitigate longer problems that no single town can solve alone. The 2025 Community Health Needs Assessment, produced by the Neshoba Associated Boards of Health and repeated last week, Harvard Press identified 14 urgent health needs across the district's 15 towns. This week, the press is looking at how Harvard, one of the district's most best-positioned towns, is grappling with the four National Association most urgent health priorities. Before the closure of Neshoba Valley Medical Center, 43% of Harvard ambulances transports went to the Neshoba Valley Medical Center, which could be reached in another 10 minutes, according to Harvard Fire EMS records. The rest traveled further to Concord, Clinton, Leominster, producing an overall average transportation time of 16 minutes after the closure, with no nearby destinations that average rose to almost 20 minutes, a 24% increase. Summer beach season begins with a little help from rowers. While the spring weather continues to bring early winter conditions to Harvard, town officials are gearing up for the summer season at Bear Hill Pond. Beach staffing, boat storage, and resource management have been the forefront of the Park and Rec Department and McWaters and Harbor Master Ben Bryan's minds for months. As part of the kickoff for the season, Barron asked the Bromfield Acton Boxborough Bear Hill Rowing Association for assistance in prepping the town's beloved pond for open weekends, which took place on Memorial Day holiday. The town's beach officially began operations on Saturday, May 23rd, and in the early evening of Friday, May 22nd, varsity rowers took motorboats out to Rock Island and Blueberry Island to collect trash. Catherine Chapel, BHRA program director and varsity boys rowing coach, said that in an interview with the press that she regularly has the team sweep the parking lot and beach at the pond to remove debris. It might seem like a teenager's ideal Friday night, but the student participation in the cleanup were not just obliged, they were excited to help. We spent much time on the pond, said Acton Boxborough sophomore Branwell Lickey. I'm happy to do whatever I can to give back. The first stop of the cleanup crew was Rock Island, the first landmass easily viewed by the town and a popular destination for paddlers. Raising 4 feet above the water level, the large boulder provides an exhilarating jump into the water, a rite of passage for many generations of Harvard youths. Uh, We're now going to take another break for a public service announcement, and then Bob will be back to finish up our hour.
Would you like to hear news from Fitchburg and Leominster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 4 p.m.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:45. I'm going to continue with articles from the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. Undefeated, AMSA softball completes 18-0 regular season, by Evan Walsh. After every win this season, players on the Advanced Math and Science Academy, AMSA, softball team took a 5-minute drive down the street and met for a celebratory Dairy Queen trip on head coach Jason Ayak's dime. Ayak is starting to get really nervous about his wallet. That's because, with an 8-2 win over Hopedale on May 23rd, his team officially capped an undefeated season. With 18 wins and 0 losses this year, the Eagles are headed into the playoffs as the top-seeded team and clear favorite in Division 4. AMSA has outscored its opponents 166-38 over the course of the year. There's been plenty of winning and plenty of dairy desserts. I had no intention to have a perfect season. I had no intention of going undefeated. That was not my biggest goal, said Ayak. The only thing I care about is winning the last game of the season. Now it's the playoffs, and we have no choice but to go undefeated if we want to reach where we want to reach. With history on the line, the Eagles took a few innings to find their wings. AMSA scraped across a run in the first inning, but hits were few and far between. By the fourth, fifth, and sixth innings, however, the Eagles were comfortable at the plate, scoring 2, 3, and 2 runs, respectively, to pull ahead 8-0. The offensive outburst was led by Gil Yost, who was excited to swing the bat again. On April 13th, the last time AMSA competed against Hopedale, Yost broke her left hand while diving for a ball in the outfield. The sophomore, who holds the school's all-time home run record, continued to support the team from the dugout as she recovered, but being sidelined was difficult. I was just really hoping to get back as soon as possible, she told the Community Advocate. It took a lot longer than I thought it would, but I was really excited to get back today. I was ready to get back into it and give it my everything. Back in the lineup, and just in time for a deep playoff run, Yost was her usual self. She hit a 2-run double to break the game open in the 5th inning, plating another run with a sacrifice fly. She is one of the best players out there, and she's certainly one of our strongest players, Ayak said. We're so happy to have her back, and she's hopefully only going to get stronger over the next couple of games. And with junior Ava McLeod, the Eagles had the circle squared away. McLeod struck out 6 over 6 innings of work, taking a no-hitter into her final inning. Freshman Adrian Murphy was also immense, striking out the side in the 7th inning. We were like a family. We all love each other a lot, said Murphy. It's been an expensive spring for Ayak, but he's not complaining. Each blizzard means that the Eagles are one step closer to their ultimate goal, a championship trophy. Great adjustments today. Didn't start out great hitting, but we made adjustments. Put the ball in play. Our defense does what it always does. Ava McLeod keeps the batters guessing, said Ayak. Added Murphy, we're going to keep putting the work in. Athlete of the Week, Taylor Attaway, by Evan Walsh. Taylor Attaway has been there for Hudson softball. She's had to be. As the only veteran pitcher on Hudson's softball team, Attaway has taken the circle knowing that she's the only option, no matter what happens. She's handled those circumstances with maturity, and the senior captain's attitude has been commended by everyone who has crossed paths with her. Attaway will head to the University of Connecticut in the fall to study criminology. When you know that you don't have anyone to bail you out, that's a really tough feeling. You can't have an off day. What I'm most proud of is that she's never complained. Bad days, hard games, injuries. She's never pointed her finger at anyone else. She's a great kid, said head coach Laura Bellin. What's made your time on the Hudson softball team worth it? Definitely the community, for sure. I think Hudson has one of the best communities out there. No matter what our record is, the crowd always shows up for games. We always have such a great team. We always have so much fun. It's always great. Favorite meal? Sushi. I love sushi. It's my favorite food. And if I can have a crab rangoon, I'll have a crab rangoon. Favorite movie or TV show? My favorite TV show is Gossip Girl. I was obsessed with it. I watched it all so fast. You were the Hudson team that made it to the state championship in 2024. How was it? That state championship run was the highlight. We had literally 12 girls in the program, and we didn't have a JV team that year, so we all had to be one. We really put it all together, worked well together. It was great. That was my favorite time of my career. Trapped on a deserted island, what three things are you bringing? Can I bring a person? Okay, then I'll probably bring my mom. She's very resourceful. No offense to my other family members, but she's very resourceful. She knows a lot. She'll know what to do. Then probably as much water as I can bring. Maybe a map so I can get out. Marlboro man steals dump truck, plows it into police car and playground in Maine. A Marlboro man has been arrested after a bizarre crash. At about 8 p.m. on May 22nd, the Lewiston, Maine Police Department received an alert that a dump truck had been stolen from Marlboro, was in the city's downtown area. While fleeing authorities, the stolen truck's operator allegedly rammed it into a police cruiser. The police car was totaled. After crashing into the police vehicle, the truck, allegedly operated by Antonio Morales Pijon, 23, crashed into a playground fence, according to reports. One officer was injured in the incident, and two other individuals who were in the stolen dump truck were arrested. The Bangor Daily News was first with reporting. Footprints of History. Stowe History, researched and written by Stephanie Lewis. Modern Conveniences. A note from Stephanie. I want to take a moment to honor my predecessor, Lou Halperin, who penned the past tense column for many years before handing the reins off to me. I had the opportunity to meet Lou and his wife, Judith, and he was kind enough to show me many of the collections he had. He was also kind enough to bestow on me papers and materials I've used in many of my weekly columns. He had a love for Stowe and its history that will not be forgotten. May his memory be a blessing. In the early days of Stowe, homes were illumined by candles and later kerosene or oil lamps, and communication was through the postal system or by speaking face-to-face. As technology evolved, people changed the way they lit their houses and interacted with friends and neighbors. The concept of electricity has been around far longer than it has been available as a public utility. Stowe first had access to commercial electrical service in 1911, according to Crowell's History of Stowe. Hudson Light and Power provided the electricity to the town then, as it does today. A February 17, 1911 notice in the Hudson News Enterprise announced there would be a vote about connecting to electric plant in Gleasondale to Lower Stowe Village, requiring an expenditure of up to $5,000 to make this happen. Electricity had been around long before 1911 in the larger cities and towns. An advertisement in the Hudson News that ran in multiple editions in 1910 for H.H. Ostrom and Company Electrical Engineers and Contractors in Marlboro described the various electrical appliances they offered: waffle irons, coffee percolators, broilers, and electric heating pads. The ad even included a poem that listed other electric devices available, including curling irons, portable cook stoves, chafing dishes, toasters, and nursery milk warmers. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Bob Brady, along with Alan Chapman. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. The American kestrel, small, numerous, and widespread. Watch for one of these North American falcons perched on a utility wire, bobbing its tail. True to the name falcon, this species is built for speed, with long pointed wings, often bent back at the tip. If a suitable perch isn't available, American kestrels will hover above an open field. Facing into the wind, they flap their wings and use their tails to hold their position. From aloft, kestrels watch for insects, small mammals, and reptiles, which they overtake and capture. Don't be fooled by their small size, equal to that of a robin. These are fierce hunters. Using their notched beaks, kestrels quickly subdue their prey by severing the spinal cord at the neck. The lack of suitable nesting cavities limits kestrel populations in some areas, and this has led people to install wooden nest boxes. Many states now have kestrel nest box programs, placing boxes along interstate highways. On I-35 in Iowa, there's a kestrel box nearly every mile from Minnesota to Missouri. The kestrels readily adapt to these boxes and return each spring to set up housekeeping. You can find out more about kestrels, including photos and plans for a nest box, on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Jim and Birta Falconer from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be, or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well, to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.